Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 41. This week's guest is Graham Young. He's coming to talk with us about his current camera projects, and we have some questions from the Facebook group.
It's episode 41, and we have with us today Corey Cannon and Andrew Bartram, and they've just joined us.
Wait. And that's Andrew Return of the Lith Bartram.
And one salt printer to rule them all, Andrew Bartram.
who let this person?
We seem
to have been taken over by unruly podcast.
That's right. I've taken over. It's like an Instagram takeover, but it's a podcast takeover.
There you go.
So this is Graham Young from otherwise known from the Homemade Camera Podcast. So we should start
Nick.
The show. That's right, Nick. Yes, Nick's not with us today, but
maybe one day we'll. So.
But we've got two stand-ins in the form of Corey and Andrew.
Nick, I don't know how many people out there listen to the Homemade Camera Podcast, but we do. We took a challenge from Graham from the Sunny 16 podcast about a class of cameras called scammeras, and they're things that are made to look like real SLRs, but they're plastic pieces of poo. And so we tried to modify them. We tried to make them into better cameras, and I gave up. I certainly gave up. But Nick has just taken the lens and shutter off his and made it into a pinhole camera, and he sent me that last night. So he is joining the dark side, or the very small aperture side of the world.
The very small aperture side of the group.
I've followed that with interest, your scammer larks, and I learn a lot because you talked about, and I think you did as well. You learned a lot by taking those things apart, didn't you? Just looking at how a simple shutter works just on that spring.
Simple shutter and a simple aperture, adjustable aperture. There is a wealth of knowledge in those for people who want to build their own cameras, simply because they were built on the cheap, with limited, they could injection mold plastic, and they could take very thin sheets of metal and some springs, and they put that together with a very reliable shutter system. And I'll put it this way, it's more reliable than my Konica TC that has a second curtain that just kind of moseys up when it wants to, so it's more reliable than that.
Does it have, is the apertures are on like a little flippy wheel like in the Holga, or is it step above that?
It's not on flippy wheel. It's two blades, and there's a 45 degree or a 90 degree angle cut out of each of those two blades, and they move closer together, and as they move closer together, that diamond shape gets smaller, and as they move further apart, the diamond shape gets larger. So, simple.
Get ready for very technical terms this show, everybody. Flippy wheel and diamond shape.
But the Holga doesn't have a flippy wheel. It has a little switch, and as you move it across, you're moving different size apertures over, aren't you?
Yeah, but it's not like a Holga here somewhere.
Plastic, and I mean,
If you have one that works, it's F8 and F11 or something, and you just move it across, and you can see it. So it's got two of those. What do they call those little? There's a technical term for that. I know they're apertures, but they're called when you switch over the apertures in old fashioned cameras and slide them in. What are they called?
Flippy wheels.
Flippy wheelie thing.
There's a technical term. I learned it from listening to the lenses from the Homemade Camera Podcast.
Yeah, I've forgotten the term personally or right now. But it is just two different circles cut in metal. And as you move the little lever, one replaces the other. It's the same thing that they had in box cameras. You would slide out that one little bar. on a box camera, and that had different aperture holes in it.
I have the 120 camera, the Kodak Cresta 2, I think, and that has a little metal, a little metal slidey thing with the two. And you have to be careful. It moves by itself, and so you suddenly, without knowing, you've switched apertures, so it's a bit loose. But yeah, sticky tape works.
Yeah, the key is to make sure you don't get in the middle.
Yeah.
and then you have no aperture.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So speaking of apertures, let's talk about zone plates.
Aren't you? Now, what I really want to say now is, hey guys, why don't we start
the show?
What about we start the Lensless podcast?
There we go.
I didn't do it anywhere near as well as Graham says.
Well, one of the things
we don't expect much from you, Andrew. It's all right.
No, I know. I've learned that.
We need music to come in. If we have music coming in,
Well, Corey's editing skills aren't that good, you see. Plus, we're on the Anchor app, and I'm not sure. Yeah. You know,
which is one of the most wonderful things in the world, the Anchor app.
Yeah,
I have to say.
Who asked about zone plates? And that was that reprobate Neil Piper, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
I spent a day with Neil the other day. You would have seen folks on the Lensless podcast Facebook group would have seen the face cast. In fact, two or three face casts. I did the one Neil was. He's really scary looking, isn't he? Stuck his face right up to the camera.
You guys are out there by the wash. The wash.
The wash. No, the wash.
The wash. It looked fun.
Were you in Great Yarmouth?
No, not far away from Great Yarmouth. I was born at Great Yarmouth. Is my hometown. That's where I was born.
Oh, okay. When my dad was born in what used to be Rutland.
Yep.
And
I remember you. I remember you telling me. I think we had a chat somewhere on Instagram, and you said.
Yeah, and when we went over there in 1977, just at the height of punk rock. God, it was great to be at the height of punk rock when you're 12, and you look at these people walking by, and you go, "Those are punk rockers." but we
what in Great Yarmouth or in Rutland?
No, not
I can't
in
imagine
Yarmouth.
You get many punk rockers in Rutland, to be fair.
No, right, and not in Rutland. No, this is in it was one of those open top buses where we're taking the tour, and like the tour stopped.
The double decker bus.
Tour guide said, one of the double decker buses, and the tour guide said, "Look over to your left. There are two punk rockers walking up the street."
Andrew Bartram is one of those guys.
That's right.
No, I was far too sensible to be a punk rocker. But those guys in Trafalgar Square got really clever in the 70s and 80s. They would they became professional models. So if you wanted to take their picture, they'd demand a fiver from you or something.
Nice. Good for them. Yeah. But anyway, we went to Great Yarmouth, and it was – a blowing day of wind, but it was a great memory. So sorry to interrupt.
So I was just about to say, zone punk rockers demanding fivers remind me of zone plays.
That's right.
You see, what you'll notice, Graham, is that Corey keeps desperately to try and pull us back onto something.
I know. I don't follow that, but yes.
So Neil Piper, who I had the pleasure of spending the day with, along with a couple of other, Mr. Alex Yates and Joe Baker,
Evil Chutney.
Evil Chutney, yes. Mm-hmm. Neil has asked how they differ to pinhole. So we thought we'd get the world's expert here on homemade cameras.
Wikipedia.
So Graham, what do you know about zone plates?
I know that they make fuzzy images. So I have not done any zone plates at all. So I have to kind of beg off on yeah, well, okay, or just kind of step aside with the knowledge.
Well, Corey posted an equation on the Lensless Podcast Facebook group, so which I think he just made up.
No. I forgot to do the rest of it because after the equation, you write equal, then you write zone plates, and then that's it. That's how it works.
Okay. Well, I know you've gone to Wikipedia. To Wikipedia, the source of all wisdom. I've actually consulted something which is more reliable, and it's the book by Eric Renner called Pinhole Photography, and he has a whole section on zone plates. But you go first with your Wikipedia reference.
It says that a zone plate is a device used to focus light or other things exhibiting wave character.
Like a lens. Zone,
Yeah, zone plates use diffraction instead of refraction or reflection, like a pinhole uses. So you can focus it. It actually has a depth of field. So if you imagine a pinhole and then make another ring a little bit bigger, that'd be completely black, and then a ring bigger than that one that's transparent, then another ring a little bit bigger than that one that's black, that's what's happening. That's all I know.
Eric Renner says, and I've highlighted a few things, zone plates render soft focus imagery. What was that you said, Graham? Something about blurry?
Yeah, they're blurry. They're, yeah.
But he also said, foliage such as grasses and leaves under certain lighting conditions, it's not very helpful because it doesn't say what, resemble infrared photography. So it says that zone plates consist of a series of concentric rings alternating clear and opaque. Now, interestingly,
so when it says that it resembles infrared, they're talking about the wood effect.
Are you getting rude again?
No. Because everything will turn, green will turn white, and then it has that kind of fuzzy look. For when you're shooting infrared with like traditional, original film, like the Kodak HIE film, you know, like the real infrared film, I guess.
Right, so apart from giving you wood, it says zone plates focus to a point, which I think you just said, as lenses do.
Yep.
So you need to be very specific on your sort of focal length and f-stop right. and diameter. Zone plates apparently involve constructive interference, whereas pinholes are examples of destructive interference. And that's because with pinholes, Eric Renner says, so many of the light rays going into a pinhole are destroyed by one another. And that doesn't happen, apparently. It's constructive and not destructive with zone plates. So exposure times for zone plate images are drastically reduced to approximately 1/7 of those for pinhole images. You know, if you really want to read all this stuff, and this book is highly recommended, I think it's one that Neil Piper spoke to you about. Do you remember when I was in Wales and Neil Piper came and acted as your sidekick, Corey, in the summer?
Mm-hmm.
He spoke about this book by Eric Renner, Pinhole Photography, Rediscovering a Historic Technique.
Yeah.
And it's very good. It's one of these books that you can just keep diving into and reading, get confusing yourself because it's quite detailed. And then going away and coming back to it, but it's a good book to have on the shelf.
With pinhole, when you take a picture, no matter how close or how far away you get from it, it stays the same.
Yeah.
Focus wise, with zone plates, you actually have a depth of field, so you can change how you can have perfectly focused. And then have that fuzzy look like you smeared something on your lens or whatever, you know, soft focus filters they used to have, you know, or you could come away from it and get it out of focus and still have that fuzziness. It just depends on how fuzzy you want to be.
One of the things I was just looking at some zone plate images, and they're both more in focus in that edges of things are sharper.
Yeah.
But then they also tend to kind of bleed into the next object.
Right.
So it's both sharper and fuzzier at the same time. I did find, because this is kind of my role here, I did find a little thing on how to make them if you want to make one at home.
Wow.
So what you would do is you would find a zone plate pattern. And the idea is that the first... Yeah, it starts out with a clear space in the center, and then there's a thick ring of black, and then there is a, a clear space, and then a ring. And as they get further out, they're narrower.
Mm-hmm.
Both the black ring and the space between, the white space between. So it's not something that you make physically, but you can do it using 35 millimeter film.
And scratching it?
Well, no. That would be one way. You would have to fog it, you know, or expose it to a white object and make it, so when you develop the negative, it's completely black. And you could do that. But the idea is that you could print this pattern out on a, you know, on a letter size or, you know, or A4 sheet of paper, and then take a photograph of that so that, you know, it's the, as high a contrast as you possibly have. So this would be something that would be perfect for lith film, not printing. but you could do... but you can do that.
I'm just getting excited.
Yeah, I was briefly, and then he said film.
Yeah, film. But the, and lith film, the whole thing with lith film is it's designed for the reproduction of like magazine pages and stuff like that. But the black and white elements of them. So anyway, so it gets very black and very white. And then you just take that negative. After you photographed it, you would make the thing on the piece of paper fairly large, and then you would just take that negative, and that would be what you would put in the space where you would put your pinhole. So it'd be just that little bit of film. So you can make them at home. And one of the things that I've known about them, there was somebody I knew who was really into them back in the 80s. So I'm just telling you. There's been a little bit of time that's passed. You can do little dots. You can do concentric dots. And you can do, I saw spirals. You can do a bunch of different shapes. And they'll each have, you know, some different properties. So that would be worth, you know, worth experimenting with.
I have one on a lens baby thing that someone Diane Peterson, I think it was her, if I've got it right.
Yeah, apologize, Diane.
I think it was Diane sent me one, and it's got a zone plate attachment. It's so you've got the lens baby body, and then you can put the different optics inside. And one of them is a zone plate, and not played with it yet because it frightened me a bit, to be honest.
So there you go, Neil. I hope that helps you out.
Yeah.
But, well done, Neil. Thanks for being.
And Gretchen. Gretchen said, "I'd like to know too." So I don't know if we've messed it up or helped anybody out.
Yeah, go and read about it in Eric. Go and get Eric Renner's book because that's a cool book. And Neil also said, "Graham, what's the most bizarre thing you've ever made a camera out of?"
I've not made a camera out of a fish or a watermelon or anything that's odd like that, unfortunately. I've used pretty standard materials. One of the things that is, I'm just trying to think of anything that's really odd and nothing that's really odd. I'm trying to think of it. They're mints. They're made in England. Altoids. Altoids have the big box, which is, you know, like would be like 120 size, but then they also have a smaller box.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've made a pinhole camera out of that. The big thing is that you have to keep you have to cover the metal in some way.
So it doesn't reflect.
So it doesn't scrape your film. Yeah, all up.
Gotcha.
But what, so it's at the edges. I mentioned that and somebody said, oh, just take a straw, a plastic straw. If you can find one in the US these days, I don't know. Are they completely banning plastic straws in the UK?
Not here in the South. You can find them everywhere. They just throw them outside. Right.
Well, yeah. Cause we live in America.
they'll be, as long as they're American straws, you'll be fine, won't you?
There we go.
not the ones from California because they'll cause cancer. Though everything from California causes cancer.
It's known by the state of Florida cause cancer. State of California cause cancer. but you just take a plastic straw and cut it to the right length, and then just slit it and put it up over that, and then that apparently takes care of that.
Hmm.
I you know odd things. There we have a brand of razors in the U.S. called Harry's. And it's one of those disruptive, we're going to make them cheaper and better kind of, things that they sold online, but now you
shaving
can get
razors for everybody.
Shaving razors, right. And they come in a box that is, I would say here, hang on a second, going to measure my fingers, 2 inches wide, by about 8 or 9 inches long. And that's what the razor comes in.
Whoa.
And then I put a piece of, put a 35 millimeter film through that. And it, of course, it vignettes pretty horribly. And the paper is not quite thick enough, and it fogs a little bit. But that's, you know, nothing's like super crazy. I usually, when I'm building something, I'm building from materials to like a shape specification, as opposed to, oh, that would make a great camera. Although I do see those things all the time.
Or you're building around something, aren't you? Folks listening, if you want to go, Graham has a Flickr site, which is...
Homemade podcast.
Yes. Yeah. And there's an album in there called My Handmade Cameras. And the most recent ones, I think you were talking about this on a show I was listening to. It looks like the RB67 back. That's what it looks like to me. It looks like a rotating back. And then you're building a sort of wooden camera body on the front of that. That could be a pinhole, because lots of people are doing things with Hasselblad backs and Kia backs. And you could use...
Right. So, and there's
what's going on there? That is an RB67 back, isn't it? That's got the graph lock.
Yes, it is. Fitting on. And to get to this feed, the Flickr group that I mentioned was the homemade camera Flickr group. On Flickr, I am Freezer of Photons. Yeah, all just one word. And I have what I refer to as the 67. And what it is I just made a box that will allow an RB67 back to just slide in. And
this is for pinhole, right?
This is for pinhole.
Right.
It has I originally made it with a shutter, and it was a horrible shutter. It was a slide up shutter, and it didn't fit, and it fell out, and it got lost and all that stuff. But then I realized the RB67 back has a dark slide. And so what I do is I just, you know, do the pinch method where I put my finger over the pinhole, remove the dark slide, lift my finger, put my finger back, put the dark slide back in and advance it. And that works very well.
But you've got to overcome one of the interlocks with a little groove in, haven't you, too? Is that right? Yes, because you can't pull the dark slide out because it's interlocked, isn't it, with the body of the RB.
Yeah, they had three different models. There was the Pro. No, there was the RB67, RB67 Pro, and the RB67 Pro S, if I remember correctly.
There's a Pro ST. Isn't there a Pro ST as well?
Yeah, a Pro ST. That's the third.
You can put digital on the back of it, I think, right?
Pro S, Pro SD. So anyway.
Pro S and Pro SD. It's a Pro S I've got anyway. I've got the Pro S.
Yeah, some of them do have the interlocking, and this one did. And what the interlock is there is the dark slide is just imagine, you know, the dark slide with a little notch at the bottom, and that's where it would, you know, the notch would, there's a little pin comes up and holds that in. So my solution was to go to Ace Hardware, which is, you know, a DIY hardware store that's everywhere in the U.S. and bought, I forget exactly what the thickness is, an equivalent thickness. I took in the dark slide and I bought some brass that is, you know, it cost me $3, and I cut a piece the same size and shape, but without the notch.
Yeah.
And so that just, takes care of that.
Because if you've got it attached to the camera body, you can override the interlock, can't you? There's like a little lever or button or something you press.
Well, there is, but this, pinhole end of it, the plastic, 3D printed pinhole end of it that I have covers that little spot, and it's just a little, a little thing you can press in. So, so I had to cost me $3, right? You know. To override that. When you're making a camera, the most difficult thing, there are two difficult things. If it's a lens camera, the shutter system is very difficult. If you're using, you know, say 100 speed film ish, right? So that's a very difficult thing to work around. And the second most difficult thing to do is reliable film transport. So using a back like this takes care of one of those two things.
Right.
You know, takes care of the transport, and they're not expensive. You can get them in the $50 range for these backs. And the key is there are some, this one's made for an RB67, but if you want a really cheap one, and this, people who don't know film, the history of film get scared off by this, but, Graflex was bought out by the Singer Corporation right around, I don't know, the late 60s. And they made a bunch of stuff that was Singer Graflex, but it just had the Singer logo across it.
You mean so Singer looks, like the Singer
sewing machine?
Yeah, yeah,
right.
That's what I thought. Yeah, yeah.
So they were the last of the runs. So they're the best of the quality, best of the design, the pinnacle of the design. And they're less desirable because they say Singer across them. And then they have the winding lever is plastic, and it's either a light blue or it's a red. Mm. And that indicates the size of them. But those go for less than, you know, like the old Graflex ones with a turn knob and a back window. Mm. And so that's a little, you know, dip in the market where you can find those types of things.
Cool. There you go, Neil. Was that exotic enough for you? Andrew?
Yes, mate.
You went quiet. I thought you had left.
No, I'm still here. You'll be pleased to know.
Awesome. So
I've got a list of things, but
I wanted to talk on the Facebook group, Luis Caso
mm-hmm.
Was asking about developing tanks,
yep,
or systems for 4x5 because he got some film and a camera. I think, and I messed up when I got what I was talking about. I was talking about the Mod 5.4, but I was referring to the Bees 4x5 on Instagram. He's Bonet Photography. He 3D prints these.
How do you spell that?
Bonet Photography.
Okay,
Bonet. Bonet.
I would say Corey would put it in the show notes, but Corey's show notes are rubbish, I have to say. Compared to the excellent Homemade Camera Podcast website with their show notes, I was looking earlier, and they're fantastic. So
I do enjoy doing those.
They're very detailed.
Yeah.
The links will be in the show notes. They're always there, folks.
Yeah. This guy does like his own. What's the agitation system? Film developing system.
Yeah, that you're thinking about. If you hadn't said something about it, I could have told you.
Yeah.
Jobos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's got one made out of Legos.
he
looks
3D,
like Legos. Or,
he 3D
or
prints them now and sells them. And I was looking at them and I almost just about bought one. Actually, I was like,
yeah,
man, that might actually work. Cause, I was having troubles with bubbles on my, getting bubbles, you know, in those black.
Where do you have troubles with bubbles?
When I developed my 120 film, and you develop it, you know, and go to scan it along the very top edge of it.
I've
black half moons.
Now I've had that. And it can be due to just too aggressive agitation. I tell you what it can also be. It can also be residual leftover wash aid. You know that if you're all, if you haven't given them a good wash out at the end, when you put your developer in, you can get foaming due to, you know, the fact that you've left some surfactant in there. And I tell you what, I don't actually, since I moved over to stainless steel Hughes spirals, I've never had a bubble present because those things are easy to clean, and I don't think there aren't so many sort of surfaces where air can get trapped, because with those Patson ones, nothing wrong with Patson ones, but I think you just need to be careful with your agitation regime and make sure those boys are well and truly rinsed at the end.
Well, that's what I've been doing. I mean, I haven't been doing. That's what I've been doing now.
Do you give it a wrap on the table as well at the end?
Yeah. When I do my agitation, I'll.
I think you're just being a bit heavy-handed. You've just been a bit meaty, ham-fisted. I think is the expression.
I'm not. I actually agitate very, very slow and precisely.
Yeah, the same could be way. Then. But you use a washer, a wetting agent at the end, do you?
I do.
Maybe it's residual of that, because that's. I certainly had it with little bubbles at the top. It's quite common.
What I started doing was, as soon as I get done doing everything and everything's hung up, I come back to the kitchen sink and I take the smallest little tiny drop of like dish soap and drop in there, super hot water, close it up and shake it for a good minute, and then rinse everything out real good and let it dry. And since I started doing that, it's pretty much stopped.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's why I didn't buy the. I was going to buy his agitator because I don't know, it just looks pretty cool. It'd be nice to just set it down and walk away.
I know not everyone gets on with stainless steel, but
I don't at all. That's why I was like, no.
the Hughes make of spirals where they have the center catch in the middle. Are just a joy to work with, and they're really great. You use stainless steel, don't you?
Yeah, and I bought a tank that had four reels in it, four 35mm reels, and some of them were those Hughes with the little catch, as opposed to the spring, and those are really nice. Those are the best.
Yeah.
The catch or the
Hughes,
spring.
Hughes, no, the Hughes ones, if you just search for Hughes. In fact, Hughes, the guy who makes them is about half an hour from where I live. He used to have it's a really interesting story. He used to have a big factory and employed dozens of people, and they made stainless steel things for hospitals, for x-ray machines, for hangars and tanks. And now it's like him and his assistant. Out of a big, it's like he works out of a garden shed, but it's a big garden shed, you know. And I've been round to his house, and I've been in there, and he's just surrounded by stuff, you know. And you have to, if you go onto his website, you can't get a price for anything. You have to email him and stuff. But he's a lovely chap once you get into contact with him. And they still make the spirals, but you have to get your tanks from somewhere else because he doesn't take.
You can buy them from. It's pulling up right here on B&H.
Yeah, and it's spelled HEWES.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're made down the road.
$37 for a 35mm reel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think down the road I can buy direct from the man himself. I think I can get a brand new 120 reel for, I think he said it was £20. So what's that? 30 bucks?
Mm-hmm. Not even.
Not even that, no.
28.
Occasionally you find them on eBay, but they are expensive, but they last you a long time. And if you get on with them, they're really good. But that's not answering the question, because it wasn't a question about 4.5 or 5.4.
Yeah, so you have three choices. You have the SP445, the Mod 54, and then you have B's 4x5 insert into the Patterson tanks that he 3D prints them.
They're all the commercial ones, but you can trade develop if you can bear that in the darkness, or you can. Some people use that just a tank and fold them over. They call that the taco method, I think.
Well, that's what he was asking about, and I've used the taco method. The taco. You said taco, Andrew.
Taco, as opposed to the rhythm method.
And I couldn't. I tried. Rubber bands, and I tried hair tie for my taco.
Are we talking about the rhythm method or the taco method?
The taco method. But no matter what I did, I still got some kind of a line there from it. I don't. If some people say they don't get it. I mean, maybe they don't. I don't know what I was doing wrong. But
tanks and hangers, if you can get hold of those, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. If you're looking for convenience, the best thing to do is go with the SP445, or which is a system all by itself, or if you have a developing tank already, you can use the Mod 54 or the B's 4x5, and it just slides right in. You don't have to buy it, you know.
What I would say with the SP445 is be quite random with your agitation and not uniform. But some of the guidelines online do sort of show a fairly uniform method. I found that a more of a random approach to agitation.
Flip it over, because, around, spin it.
I have had, and I think you have, Corey, as well, on the non-emulsion side, so it's not really an issue. Sometimes you get a little bit of banding on there. From the central support strut in the carrier, and I think that's probably just due to the developer not getting to all in the right places, and it doesn't affect printing or scanning because it's on the non-emulsion side and you don't see it, but it's a bit worrying when you do kind of see it.
So that's what I recommend for him is that.
Yeah, the SP445. He's working on an 8x10 option as well now. I think that's due to go to Kickstarter fairly soon.
Yeah, but they're going to be doing a tray.
Yeah, it's completely different, isn't it? I was surprised.
So I don't know.
Maybe. It's a kind of a tray system.
If they can get the tray to work out where you could do maybe two sheets of 8x10, at least two sheets, it'd be worth it. If not, you might as well just development like normal, you know what I mean?
You went all Dalek-y there. I don't know if it was just me.
Can you hear me?
I can.
I was saying that if he can get that 8x10 developer, the tray system they're working on, if they can get that to develop, you know, like two or three sheets, it'd be worth it. But if you can only do one, I mean, you might as well just do tray developing, you know? I mean, it's...
I've been tray developing these last few days during the Christmas holidays, and folks, if they've been following along on the Lensless Podcast Facebook group, would have been seeing
X-ray
my
film?
Yes. So I've been playing with X-ray film in the 8x10 pinhole camera. I've actually got the prototype camera that James Guerin sent me as he was trying to design his reality 8x10, and he sent that in the post, and I've just taken delivery of some Fuji HRT 8x10 X-ray film. In fact, it wasn't. I ordered 8x10, and they sent me 10x12, which is a bit of a nuisance because it means I have to cut it down. I went into the dark room, opened this up, and thought, this doesn't fit in the dark slide.
These are damn Fujis.
I definitely ordered 8x10, and they've sent me 10x12, so it doesn't matter really. I'm shaving bits off in the dark room, but. I think so. I reached out onto the group with some questions about things like reciprocity. James Guerin had given me quite a detailed set of instructions on processing X-ray film. This Fuji stuff is double-sided. I think you've used it, Corey, haven't you?
Yeah.
So it's double-sided, so it has emulsion on both sides, which means it's very, once it's wet, it becomes very, very susceptible to scratches.
Scratchy, yeah.
So I've got three sheets of glass in 10x12 trays, and I'll come on to exposure in a minute, what I've discovered. But for processing, wash the negative first in running water, James suggested. Otherwise, you get uneven development. So I did that. And then I made up a solution of 1 to 100 rodinal or rodinal, whichever you want to pronounce it. And then basically it's like stand development, but for 6 minutes. So you slide that sheet in, you don't agitate. I gave it a little bit of, because I couldn't help myself, I gave it a little a little one right at the beginning just to make sure it was covered. And then I leave it for a minute, and then you just turn it over very gently, you know, and lay it down again. That's enough agitation. And I took it out after 6 minutes, and I just stuck it in a water bath then in case I needed to put it back in. The developer, because you're developing under a red safe light, so you can kind of see what's going on. Inspection. So I held it up to the red safe light, and I thought, well, I've got a what looks like a pretty good image. So then I just went ahead and fixed it. And the second sheet I'd exposed for longer time because I didn't know what the reciprocity was, and nobody could really tell me. So I'd got a base exposure of a minute, and I guessed at 5 minutes and 10 minutes, so that's like nearly three stops. 1, 2, 4, 8. Yeah, so it's just over three stops, and 5 minutes was 2, 4, 8. Yeah, about three and a bit stops. I don't know, two or three stops difference. And as it turned out, that wasn't far off. So for a minute exposure indicated with James's camera, then the reciprocity was 3 to 4 stops, I would think, really, for a minute. And the negatives look pretty good. They're not marked in any way. I've managed to not scratch the emulsion.
Cool.
And I'm going to use them for making some salt prints.
Oh, see, I was just sitting there. I was listening to him, and I was going to say, hey, Corey, hang on a second. Let me tee him up. How are you going to print these?
Well, so, funnily enough, I'm going to contact print them onto watercolor paper, which has been soaked in sodium chloride or salt water, and then coated with a combination of silver nitrate and citric acid, and which acts as a stabilizer.
You know,
and then you expose it under a UV safe light.
The thing I liked about doing that X-ray film was it's fun to watch it. It is fun to watch it develop, you know, in the tray, but the first time I did it, it fixes so fast. You know, like I developed it, you know, and then I stopped it, and I put it into the fixer, and I turned around, and I came back, and it's under a red light, and it's kind of dark, you know, and I couldn't see the sheet. I thought, I don't know what had happened. I was like, where did it go? It was like 30 or 40 seconds, and it's like a minute is all it takes to fix that X-ray film.
Yeah, I left it in longer because the fixer I'd had mixed up was a photo speed, I think, and it's generally about 5 minutes in film. So I left it in a couple of minutes, and then I just switched the light on to see what was going on, because you can do that,
yeah.
You know, but with fixer, and it was just it's got a very dense blue color to it.
It does,
I'm going to fix it a bit longer to see if it goes, but of course it doesn't. It is the base color. I messaged James and said, "Is it meant to be blue?"
Mm-hmm.
And it says, "I think the blue did get a bit lighter, but so I fixed mine for longer than that." But I didn't need to. I don't think
it only takes like 30 seconds, man. It clears fast.
Yeah,
it clears really fast. I guess maybe just because they need it to clear fast if they're doing X-rays. You know, I don't know.
I guess so. Yeah, but it's very. You guys in America can buy X-ray film. The Fuji stuff. There is a source of single-sided, and if you search through the Lensless Podcast Facebook group, somebody, and I apologize because I didn't make a note of this. Somebody had recommended a single-sided X-ray film, which I can't remember whether it's blue sensitive or green. It's a bit more expensive, that one. But the Fuji stuff is cheap and cheerful. You can get that. Yeah. You can get that off Amazon.com for $30 to $40 for 100 sheets of 8x10.
Yeah, that's what mine was. I ordered mine straight from a company called ZZ Medical. So if you're in the States,
if you go onto the Amazon site, I think they're one of the suppliers. It says available from different suppliers, and you click on it, and it takes you to that.
Yeah, I think I got 100 sheets of 8x10. I think it came out to be $40 with shipping.
Yeah, so because I had to pay import tax, which was all covered under the Amazon take care of that for you. So I think when I got those home, I'd probably spent about £75. So that's it's got more expensive.
And I tell you what, if you've never held a box of 100 sheets of 8x10 film, it's very heavy and very intimidating.
It is, yeah.
I opened it up and I was like, whoa, this is a lot of film.
Yeah. So I've shot 4 sheets so far, and I've been very pleased. I did another 2 when I went out on that pinhole walk with Neil Piper and Alex Yates and Joe Baker.
Yeah.
And they were very impressed at my large camera. And the fact that I stood there for 15 minutes to make an exposure in daylight.
Awesome.
So you're contact printing. Have you done any contact printing, Graham? Because we did have a question about contact printing.
Yeah, I haven't done any contact printing in a long time. I don't. I do a hybrid system where I'm scanning to digitize, and I'm not doing printing. A lot of it has to do with not having a dark room at home and my wife not really being thrilled with the idea that I do film developing. So there's a little bit of politics in that. But you know how that goes. But the other end of it, the one that really keeps me from it is I did not have a great experience on the printing side back when I had darkrooms at home for, I don't know, 10 years.
Right.
And I even did, you know, RA4 color printing, which really hurt my brain. That stuff really hurt my brain.
Why? Is it bad? Just, I don't know.
So
you have to sort out the color casts, don't you?
You have to color balance. So, so you do, and I was doing it with gels and a black and white enlarger as opposed to a color head enlarger. Ugh. Andrew, you talked about how much you like taking your triple O brush and going in with your spot tone and spotting those. Yeah. Shoot me, you know, I have no interest in doing that. Part of the deal was I wasn't good at it because it was so expensive and I was poor at the time. And, you know, throwing away a dollar every time, you know, the print didn't come out was not something that I wanted to do. And I think that now I would be a little bit better off at it, you know, simply because I wouldn't have that huge cost anxiety.
Right.
You know, but then I have to set up a darkroom and I have to do all that type of stuff. So I'm kind of considering contact printing a little bit more as something to do, because if there's dust on there, it's dust size. It's not, you know, super huge.
Well, Clifford Hampton on our Lensless Podcast Facebook group asked, "What's the best paper for contact printing?" I'll get Corey and Graham to talk about it on the show, but because it's quite a, you know, it depends what you want to do. Whether you're talking alternative printing, like I've touched upon cyanotypes, salt print. So there, your negative is going into contact with sensitized, maybe watercolor paper. But Corey, are you looking to just take a sheet of a roll of 35mm negatives and do a quick contact sheet to evaluate the pictures, or
do you want to make mail postcards? You know,
but whatever. Basically, I think you'd agree, wouldn't you, Corey, that any photographic papers is okay. Ilford multigrade's fine.
Yeah, I would start off with just getting, if you know, if you're contact printing anything smaller than 4x5 or, you know, 120, just get a pack of really cheap 4x6 Ilford paper and just try it and see if you like how it looks, you know. I think you can get a pack of it with, like, what, 10 sheets in it? 10 or 25 sheets to a box, you know, so you can...
And if you buy those Ilford multi, I think Andrew Sanderson was talking to us about, if you buy the larger Ilford contrast grade gels, you can lay those straight on top of...
Yeah, that's what I was doing.
Straight on top.
That, yeah. So if you're shooting 4x5, just get 4x6 film and just, you know, do some. That way you're not locked into a 8x10 that you don't even want, you know, you don't even like it.
So you'll have to establish a working height for a little 25-watt bulb or something or whatever. I don't know.
I was using a 7.5-watt bulb, and I had it 4 feet, 48 inches off the top of my surface.
And what sort of exposure times was that giving you?
Depending on the filter you're using, you know.
Yeah.
Contrast filter. But I want to say it was 4 or 5 seconds.
That's not too bad. Okay. So,
you know, and you can raise and lower the light bulb as you need. If you say, hey, I need more time, so you can pull it away or you can bring it closer, you know.
And if you take some florist's wire with a tiny bit of blue tack, do you call it blue tack in America?
Nope. I don't know what that is.
That's the little blue sticky stuff that you put posters on the wall with, old bits of paper. You should not have that little blue. No. You tear it off, it comes in chunks. Blue tack. You must have blue tack. What's wrong with you?
I don't know. I don't know, Andrew. What's wrong with me? Please tell me, because I don't know.
Corey hangs up his posters with hammers and nails.
Yeah,
I know. Stuff like that.
I use wooden pegs. And
how can you not have blue tack? How can you not?
I probably know what it is. It just I don't recognize it under the blue tack name.
Yeah, I don't know how else to describe it. Anyway, you can use it to stick things to walls with, but you can also take a small amount and add it, put it to the end of a piece of florist wire and then you have a very small dodging tool, so you can dodge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. And the cool thing about doing using a 7.5-watt bulb, if you don't have it in larger, you can just buy, you know, go to Lowe's or somewhere. If you have an old lamp, take it apart. You can go to Lowe's and buy a lamp kit, a rewire lamp kit.
Go to where?
For about $6, like a hardware store, okay. You know, like you can buy a new socket for a lamp and then it has a cord attached to it.
Oh, yeah.
Put a plug on it. Yeah. You don't have to have any way to support it whenever you're making the contact print. You really only need one hand, so just hold it up arm's length and do your test and then set it back down and do your developing, you know. So it doesn't have to be any, you know, great links and major engineering to do it. Toby was doing it with just – was it Toby? No, it wasn't Toby. It was somebody else. Maybe it was Alex. Purcell was saying he was just turning the light on in his room and doing it, you know, like the light he had on in his – in his bathroom or somewhere, I think.
Yeah, but he's Welsh. He's Welsh. They have a very cavalier approach to all things, including
they just throw caution to the wind.
Yeah.
So contact printing can be as easy as you want. Trying to accomplish, you know.
Yeah.
So, while you guys were talking about the contact printing and all that type of stuff, I'm on Amazon and I'm just looking at X-ray film. And I just, you know, for people who don't want to put, you know, use an 8x10 camera, there's dental X-ray film and it comes in three sizes from like 22x35mm up to 31x41mm.
3x2 inches?
You can get let's see, a box of 150 of them for $43. And so I don't know. That might be something I'm going to try out. It's kind of interesting. I know these sizes, the 24x40mm, no perf, single sheet kind of idea could be, you know, I'll put a zone plate on it and go to town.
Right.
So that can be something a little bit different from, you know, it's going to have an X-ray view and it's going to, you know, a zone plate, just stack all those things together.
You have to be careful, though. Don't stand in front of your camera because you'll just record your all your bones on the film.
Let's hope not, because that might indicate, you know, some sort of like nuclear explosion behind.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, and then you can just see them. I don't think you need X-ray film at that point. So
let's talk about what do we want to talk about now?
24 squared. I'm surprised Graham has been so restrained.
Oh yeah.
I tell you what, if it was Zeb Andrews on the show, he would have had that right at the top of the show to talk about 24 squared.
Yeah, but I think I would have also been, you know, like on a subway in Manhattan. and there would be people asking for money and stuff like that, you know. So the 24 squared, it is a pinhole that takes 35mm film and it shoots a square image. So it's 35mm film and it's I'll do my little Dalek.
Okay.
It takes 35mm film. It takes a 24x24mm image. So it, you know, it's the space between the sprockets and it's squared. And it's 3D printed. And I've I have a 3D printer that I have at work. And I've just actually purchased a new 3D printer for almost nothing. And I'll tell you guys about that in a minute. I have one at work that is owned by the school that I teach at, and I can't really use it for production. So, I searched out some commercially available production. And, as an example, Corey got one of those and, the winding handle broke. So it wasn't working. So I have them now printed by Ethan Moses, who is Cameradactyl.
Oh, yeah. Cameradactyl man. Butter grips.
Yeah. And he's a wizard with printing, and so he's producing them, and I have somebody producing the pinholes, who apparently is producing for some quite major people that I can't talk about. So it's 3D printed. I've been selling them on Etsy. When I set up the price and set up the store, it had been so long since I sold something on Etsy. I forget about their cut. And so after selling out my first batch of these cameras, I realized that I didn't price them high enough. And I just about broke even.
They did go quickly, didn't they?
They went quickly, seven in 7 days, and wow. Which is way quicker than I expected. So what I'm doing, the whole concept of this, and I've set it up as the Frozen Photon Camera Company on Etsy, but I don't have anything up there right now, so it'll be the middle of January before I have anything else up there. But the concept is a small batch camera. And, you know, if you get a small batch of anything, there's going to be a variation batch to batch. And so one of the things that I am varying is the color. So the body has to be black. But I'm varying the other color elements. And so the first batch was orange, and that was the launch edition. And so we won't see that. So I have two more batches coming, and so I'm going to have gray and black for those people who want to be stealthy. And then there was just a discussion on the Classic Lens podcast about the idea of a stealthy, you know, a black camera is stealthier. Nobody will notice when you take the picture. What is that black box he's holding up to his eye?
Yeah, no, right.
So there's going to be that. There's going to be a blue, a medium blue, not a dark blue, not a light blue, a medium blue. So those are going to be the next two batches. As I get feedback, and Andrew gave me a couple of pieces of feedback. Well, each of you actually gave me a piece of feedback because I sent them pre-production models. And one of the things that Andrew had trouble with was the tripod socket did not have enough headroom. No. So you would screw it down and then it would be sitting, you know, above the plate, you know.
I've had to pack it out with sticky back foam or something. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the thing I think about is it would probably just sit on that, you know, because it's a really light camera, but you don't want to do that because that can break it. So I've moved the first batch had two tripod sockets, you know, a standard 1/4" by 20" tripod socket. And the second was a 3/8" tripod socket, you know, like a large format tripod socket.
Yeah.
And I've eliminated the large format tripod socket, although I think that's going to come back in the following batch if these two batches sell. I've put headroom because that was where it was sitting on the camera is a little bit off center, and where it was sitting on the camera, it would go through the floor or it'd have to make the camera really tall to do that.
Sure.
The other thing was Corey was talking about how the lid kept coming off on his, and so I have a groove for a rubber band. So if you do put a rubber band around it, it'll sit flat on a table still, or it'll sit flat on your tripod base plate. Mm-hmm. So those are two things. It is also the new batches are coming with a second lens. It's the standard lens. In fact, actually, I built this entirely from a comment that Corey had on an early episode. Yeah, you said something about, I like the square format, and I like, you were talking about how you didn't like 35mm for pinhole photography because you like the square format and you like the wide angle, the really wide angle that you get
The reality 6x6. Yeah.
Right. And the Terrapin Oscar and mm-hmm. some other ones. And the thing about those, so it has the equivalent focal length, the 35 millimeter equivalent focal length of about 23 millimeters. So it's got a good wide angle. It's not super wide. It's not as wide as like the 6x6 from James or Todd's Terrapin. Well, and that's what those are. And they're extremely wide. In fact, they're really too wide for my taste. So this is a little bit deeper. And then it's also, you'll be able to just pop that lens board off and swap out another lens board that also has a pinhole in it. And it'll be about a 40-42 equivalent. And it'll have, I'm ordering a different size pinhole. I'm ordering a 0.15 pinhole. So I'm going to test that out before I fully release it. But I think that'll be about the right size for that. So it'll have two different focal lengths. It'll be swappable. Cool.
So wow. Let me just get this straight. So the body is going to be fixed still. You've still got that set, but right. your new pinhole will, if it's a different size, it'll have to presumably either come further away from the fill plane or closer to.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's a little bit longer of a nose yeah. of a lens board.
Okay.
So it takes it out. To I think the measurement is 30 millimeters from the film and the equivalent of that because it's a square image as opposed to a 24x36 image. So it'll have about the equivalent field of view of about a 40, which to me is actually an ideal.
A brilliant idea. I'd love it on a 120 camera.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well. James or Todd, talk to Graham and come up with a collaboration. Yeah.
Yeah, or they can just build it because they know what they're doing. Yeah. I'm just fumbling around.
No, it sounds a great idea.
So that's the idea. And you know, as they, you know, when I sell them with a roll of film. And they, the film advance is just a simple knob, and it transfers from one 35 millimeter cassette to another 35 millimeter cassette, so you don't have to rewind.
So it's just a cassette to cassette?
Yeah, and you don't have to rewind it. If if it opens up in your bag, you know, you only have about a shot and a half of
wasted,
you know. And and the other thing is you can swap out. There's no dark slide, so you would burn a frame, but you can swap out the different lens sizes, middle roll.
As you're shooting.
As you're shooting. Yeah, absolutely. So
never thought of that, but you can, can't you? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can get you guys, I can get you guys copies or excuse me, not copies, but, those lens cones. Cause I have a couple of the lens cones and when the pinholes start coming in, I can send those out to you. Here's a couple of questions that I have for you guys, because you've been, essentially beta testing the longest. Ethan has one that he's used a little bit. But have you had any problem with the lens cap coming? The shutter mechanism is a magnetically held on, essentially a lens cap. So you just peel that off and then throw it back on. Have you had any problem with that coming off in a bag or coming off in any of those situations?
I haven't, but whenever I get done making asparagus for dinner, they come with these big purple rubber bands, you know, from the grocery store.
Yeah.
I saved those rubber bands and I just put one around it, you know.
Oh, okay.
I don't really know.
I haven't. Yeah. No, it's got quite a strong magnet on it. Yeah. In fact, if anything, I would probably say too strong, because when I was using it, I was having to hold the camera down quite to try not to introduce too much motion, too much shake as I was pulling this thing off. Yeah. Maybe I just need to perfect my technique at removing it. I don't know that. Yeah. I mean, it's a very it's a very effective lens cap. Yeah. But I think I just needed to be careful as I was yanking this thing off not to move the camera.
Well, Andrew doesn't eat vegetables. It's just meat and potatoes. So he would have never thought about the rubber band idea.
I always think of those rubber bands, by the way, as broccoli rubber bands. Yeah. As opposed to.
it has the PU, the code for weighing it, you know, like 4042 imprinted on the rubber bands.
All I would say, I mean, unlike Corey, my knob didn't fall off. So that's one good thing. It does get a bit cold in North Carolina. So.
It does.
Yeah,
maybe that's why your knob fell off, Corey.
Maybe.
So my knob was fine. I didn't believe when Graham sent these cameras. It said you need to turn the knob, the wind on lever. Let's say that for half a turn, and you know you've got some springiness in the film, so you need I did more than half a turn. I was really on the safe side, so I've got big spaces in between my results. So I don't need to be quite as conservative when I'm winding the knob around. So I think,
right,
Graham, I was chatting to you before we went started recording, and I think the technique is to just take up the slack on that knob until you just feel it pinch, and then do your half turn.
Right.
I think you're going to put some little marks on as well to help, aren't you? I was just using you. With a Sharpie pen, you just put an arrow on mine, and I was just kind of using that for reference. But
yeah,
you know,
put some kind of
mark on there to help people wind it round.
Yeah, yours had a knob. It didn't have the knob direction indicator
because it did. It was a Sharpie pen with an arrow on it.
Well, yeah, I have those printed in now. It turns backwards, but that's the way, you know, I mean, it's kind of required to turn that direction, but I have that, on there. Yeah. It's kind of a kludge, but
too bad you couldn't put a clicker in there so you could count the clicks, you know, like 25 clicks.
But you can make one. You just get like a little bit of plastic and tape it on into,
put it on top. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never gotten those to work. And I know a lot of people have. And I know people have done them with paper clips. People have done them with, you know, those bindings, those, what they call a comb binding, which are those plastic, you know, like cookbook bindings.
Yeah.
And I even bought, you know, a whole box of that stuff. And it doesn't click or it tears the film. So I've not had luck with that, but what I plan on doing for one of my goals for the upcoming year is to get an advanced clicker so it will never spin back, you know, and that's one of the problems right at the beginning.
Advanced clicker for your knob?
Yeah. Ratcheting system.
Yeah, right, like a ratchet system.
Yeah. So that's something that
you need to keep up with the technical terms.
Yeah,
I'm
right.
Trying, man. Yeah. I'm trying. Oh, me or Grant?
I think both of us. That's the technical terms.
Craftsman makes those.
right, exactly.
Big ratchet on top of it. Cool.
Yeah, I could just 3D print a bolt and, you know, click, click, click. Yeah.
Yep. I finally developed mine, actually.
Uh-huh.
Last night, I set up all my got everything set up so I can start developing again. And they're hanging up in my shower as we speak.
All right.
So I'm gonna scan them this afternoon and put some up.
The roll I put through, which was the one that came with the camera from Graham. I've shared some results. I because I've just wasted so much film. I think I only got 6 or 7 images when I could have perhaps got 30 if I was doing it properly. But I wasn't using the camera in the best of conditions. It was in a graveyard across from where I live, and it was very, very dark, and there was some sunlight around, but I've got some. I really like the results, and I don't know.
I do. I like the one with your silhouette.
I did a few of those. That's the one that came out. But you can get some sense of the how wide it is, because I stuck that camera right close to the gravestone, and you can see the writing on either side. It's mm-hmm. But the pinholes we've got in our pre-production ones, are they ones that you made or you had made? Are they,
no, those
are they different?
Those are laser
ones?
Drilled. Those are, yeah, those are laser drilled, tenth of a millimeter, 0.10 yeah. millimeter.
So are they the same?
My pictures are.
Are they the same as the ones in the models that you're selling now?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Those are. Yeah, that's the standard. And then the longer one, the one will be that'll be equivalent to about a 42 millimeter. Hmm. Those will be 1.5, or excuse me, 0.15 millimeters. I have one right now that's 0.2 millimeters, and it's just a little. It lets in too much light on a sunny day. That's like 3/4 of a second, sunny 16.
Yeah.
Which, you know, neither of you would know about, right? Oh, I guess Corey, you get some sun. I live in Florida.
Yeah, I get sun.
I get sun all the time.
I get sun all the time too.
Yeah,
it's sunny. It's sunny f.56 most of the time for me.
Yeah,
right. There we go. Yeah, Nick lives in my podcast husband. Nick lives in north of Seattle, and so he gets dingy f4.
Does he have does he have pasty skin like us Brits?
Yes, I think he does. I think he does. I did. I met him once. We started doing the podcast, and we'd already booked a vacation to Seattle and to Victoria on Vancouver Island, and so we stopped by his house and met him for about, I guess, 45 minutes, which is a little bit odd. Like, you guys haven't met either, right?
No.
Yeah. Hopefully in Boston, right?
Well, no, I can't go to Boston, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
I was in South Carolina. Was I in South Carolina?
Yeah.
Wherever I was last couple.
Charleston.
Yes. So that was this time last year. We'd just come back from Atlanta and Athens, and we did a day trip over to just into South Carolina. So
yeah.
I guess I wasn't too far away.
Beautiful. There are three cities along the East Coast that are really historic: Charleston, Savannah, and St. Augustine. Yeah. And St. Augustine is the old capital of the Spanish Empire in the New World. And I live about 30 miles from that.
Okay.
And we were just going up to Charleston. We were going to be there this last Friday, but my mother-in-law got sick, and we looked at the weather forecast, and it was going to be rainy.
We didn't get over to the coast because there'd been a storm. You get a few of those, don't you? In the fall last year, there'd been a storm. Big one came in, and Charleston hit quite badly. Just before we were due to fly out, I think in September.
Yeah. Yep. St. Augustine has a Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum.
It does. It does. And I've been in there several times.
They have the mermaid, the supposed mermaid is like a monkey.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's about 2.5 feet long. Looks like a swaddled baby. So
it does. Yeah. Totally does. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Absolutely.
I like the camera. The only thing I didn't like about it was, I'm not crazy about the big grip, but I'm not a big grip person, you know. So
yeah,
some people might like
it
if you.
So
yeah, I just slid mine off. Yeah, that's what I did.
Well, that's for when you're doing your handheld pinholes,
right?
Sure,
it's an action grip.
Action grip.
I'd like it if it changed color, though. Can you not? You know,
when you grab it.
Yeah.
I know I had mentioned that Ethan was building them, but I have better taste than that.
Well, I remember when I was younger, we used to have those T-shirts. When you put them on, they would change colors.
Yeah,
right.
Sweaty.
Hyper Touch or whatever they're called.
Right.
Like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I was an adult at that point. So
yeah, I'm the young one here. I'm the baby of the group, I guess. So I remember them.
Yeah, I think Andrew, we're about the same age. I was born in 65.
66.
Yeah.
Good
okay.
Year.
So,
oh
yeah,
my
old
God.
Old people. Yeah.
Yeah, 66. Oh, well. Good lord.
It's a good year. We won the World Cup. We won the World Cup then. That's the last time England won the World Cup. Beat Germany.
Awesome.
Yay.
Yay.
I think my dad is still happy about that. So, And by the way, he, as I said, he comes from Rutland. So Lester was his team growing up.
Yep.
And so last year was just like, oh my God.
Oh no, it wasn't last year. It was a couple of years ago when they won the Premier. Years ago. Yeah, maybe maybe 3 years ago now since they won the Premier. Ago.
Yeah, I'm still he's still high about it. So.
Yeah. I don't understand the words coming out of your mouth, yeah. but whatever.
Yeah. We're talking about we're talking about football. Yeah, proper
soccer.
No, football.
Yeah, football. Football. Oh yeah.
Well,
I was going to talk about my homemade camera. Well, no, it's not really a homemade camera. My camera mod, but I think Corey's going to not let me because we're running out of time.
You have to save it for next show.
Yeah,
Graham, you're coming back next week, right?
Sure. Why not? Sure.
We can continue this. We have more to talk about, so let's do that.
He can't come back next week. We've got a guest next week.
We do.
Yes. Oh, he could come back the week after.
Yeah. We'll come back the week after. Save your notes.
Sure.
And we'll pick it up where we left off.
We have Marco joining us next week. We should have, anyway. That's right. Umesovic. Yep. Is that right? In avoidance of reality.
So if the listeners want to have Graham come back, just let us know.
But not next week. We have a guest.
I know that. I meant the week after that. Because I still have some stuff I want to talk about, too. So we can just continue on.
All right.
Continue on. Andrew?
So, yes, mate. Yeah. I'm trying not to speak now because I can sense that Corey wants to wrap up, you see.
I have a whole car full of loud kids and groceries coming in a few minutes. So.
Loud groceries and kids.
Yeah. Yeah. I sent everybody away today so I can sit in the kitchen and do this.
Well, my wife started vacuuming, so. That'll make up for it.
So where can everybody find your cameras and you and your pictures and
First of all, I do the Homemade Camera Podcast with Nick and Graham. I'm Graham and Nick and Graham.
The better Graham.
Yes, it's spelled correctly. I don't know. I don't have any clue how that. Yeah. Graham from Sunny 16 spells his name. I think his mother might be illiterate, but we're not going to say. You aren't doing it. So you can find me on Instagram as Graham Homemade Camera, and that is GRAHAM Homemade Camera. All one word, all jammed together, Instagramish. On Flickr, I am Freezer of Photons, all one word again. I do the Homemade Camera Podcast with Nick, and you can get that anywhere that you get other podcasts. And that's about it. That's Can I do a couple of shout outs? Sure. There are things we didn't even get to. Like I wanted to talk about luminography and Hoderman.
Okay. Pencil you in for Sunday week. Okay, look, let's get Mark. Okay. Let's confirm that we've got Marco on next week because I haven't spoken to him in a while, but I think he's good for I think he's good for next week, which is the 7th.
But I want to just do one that came up yesterday on Instagram. Somebody has started following. It's Wiljax, WILJAX, and he is here. Hang on a second. I've got too many tabs open and it'll come across. Wiljax is his name. And he and another guy are building a camera out of a trailer.
I saw that.
And my God, I want, I want a trailer like that.
Pinhole like Heather Oakless?
No, it's lensed. He's got a 610 millimeter. I don't know whether it was a Fuji or a Nikon. I think it was a Nikon, 610 millimeter Nikon. Wow. So, yeah, I don't.
That would it looks like a standard lens for something like 1620 or something. I would think.
Yeah,
because 8x10 is 300 mil, isn't it? So,
yeah. Jeez. So, yeah. So WILJAX on Instagram. Take a look at that.
Cool.
All right.
All righty. Well, everybody. Hope everyone had a great Merry Christmas and
Happy New Year.
And a Happy New Year. And we'll see you next. We'll talk to everybody.
Are you supposed to? He's in England. You're supposed to say Happy Christmas. He has to say Merry Christmas.
No, that's done with now.
We have to say Happy. Yeah, okay.
You say Happy Holidays, which really annoys me.
I don't. I say Merry Christmas.
Yes, say Merry Christmas.
I say Happy Holidays.
No, well, don't, please. Say Merry Christmas.
Okay.
Well, Happy New Year. I think you just it's like a term to cover everything from Thanksgiving to New Year, isn't it? You just
right,
say,
right.
It's too complicated. Exactly. Just say holidays. Happy holidays.
Yeah. Yeah. Have a good December, January kind of time.
And Graham's coming back.
He is.
Not this week. Next week. After a week. Okay. We'll finish this.
Sounds good.
Okay. Part two. Not next
part
Sunday.
Two. All right.
Sunday after.
All right.
Okay. Have bye, everybody. Day. Happy New Year. Bye. Bye.
Yeah.
Bye. Damn.
Got it to me 4 days.
Sunday afternoon it came?
Yeah, it came Sunday afternoon. Yep.
Wow.
Because I remember thinking, my wife is going to be working Monday, and she won't be home, so when it arrives, I'll be able to get it and stick it in.
Oh, yeah.
And she walked in with the box. She's like, hey, this box came for me. I was like, I don't know what that is. I have no idea what that
yeah,
is.
Yeah, oh, it's my emulsive secret Santa.
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly.
That old trick.
Yeah.
It's really nice, though. It's got a bubble level for...